job is to talk about the downside, as it were, the potential downside of genomic medicine. I think Dr. Wallace gave you both, there were sort of hopes and also some concerns that people have. And so I want to tie it to rights and what rights might be put at risk by genomic medicine. And Dr. Henrich will address some of the safeguards that might be put in place to try to protect those rights. So I'll try to do three things: explain the nature of rights in general, and then talk about three specific rights, the right to access, the right to privacy, and the right not to know, and then indicate how those might be put at risk by genomic medicine. And so in general, rights are, human rights are possessed by all individuals. That was well documented in some of the documents that Dr. Wallace cited. They're thought to be, just conceptually, what rights are, is they're, it's a good thing to have them. They're advantageous both legally and morally, and the way they're advantageous is that they protect vital interests. So rights are usually designated to protect the things that we value the most. And the ultimate values that ground our rights are both autonomy and welfare or well-being. So autonomy meaning freedom to choose, freedom to live our lives the way we want to, and well-being, what sorts of things make us, enable us to thrive and live. And so ultimately something like in healthcare, the right of bodily integrity, that other people not invade your body, is clearly related both to autonomy, your control, and also welfare. The right of informed consent, again, both it protects welfare in the sense that you can look out for your own good, but also autonomy, just in terms of what you want to happen or not happen. And the way that rights protect us is that they impose obligations on others, and so the moral upshot of rights is that other people have obligations to treat us in certain ways, either not to do certain things to us or affirmatively to do certain things for us. And the others on whom obligations are imposed could be ranged from everyone in this room. Each of us has obligations to the others, whether we've met you or not, not to do certain things, to do certain things, but also people with whom we have special relationships. So healthcare providers have different kinds of obligations to us, and we have different rights vis-a-vis healthcare providers. Our family members, we have different rights vis-a-vis them. And then institutions, importantly, so that the government is probably the biggest institution with which we interact that has obligations to honor our rights, but also smaller institutions such as corporations or hospitals and the like. And certainly one of the things I'll be alluding to are the relationship between genomic medicine and corporations, in particular insurance. So these others are both the source of they honor your rights or that they can be the individuals that violate your rights. That's the upshot of what the obligations do. And there are excuse me, two ways to that we might hope those rights would be protected, either if individuals voluntarily or corporations comply with the obligations that they have, or alternatively, if incentives are needed, enforcement. And so what laws do, presumably, is provide incentives to either individuals or organizations to honor the obligations they have to us. We haven't talked much about groups, although Dr. Wallace's slide alluded to this, but it comes up in genomic medicine a lot. Rights are normally ascribed to individuals. That's kind of the paradigm we have, that each of us is a right holder. But there's quite a bit of literature in the last decade or so about group rights and that groups may be threatened by certain things and groups may be harmed by certain things. And so certainly in genomic medicine, there's a concern that some groups will be put at greater risk, that that members of groups will be harmed by certain kinds of either research or discoveries. And so there certainly are a number of factors that influence how vulnerable a group might be. So size or geographical isolation might be one. So if you had a small Native American tribe that was very isolated and then there was research done there, that would reveal a heck of a lot of information about individuals, and so the privacy would be threatened in certain ways. Whether membership is voluntary, such as a church versus an ethnic group is relevant to vulnerability and certainly history of discrimination. If there's been a history of discrimination against a group, they are all things equal more vulnerable than others. So then the first right that I want to talk about is the right to access to health care. Dr. Wallace cited several slides that this is widely regarded throughout the world as a right that individuals should have the right to access to health care. In the United States, it's not something that has been acknowledged, and so in the United States, not each of us is not guaranteed access to health care, and instead access to health care in the United States is given to persons through their employment. But the reason access to health care is an important right is, I mean, it's really in a sense a kind of no-brainer. It both promotes welfare and autonomy. So it promotes welfare in the obvious sense that access to health care gives you the opportunity either to prevent disease or to treat disease or positively to promote your health. And really, it's rooted both in autonomy and welfare in a fairly obvious way. Preservation of my health is part of welfare. But you think about it, that's also related to autonomy. So many of the projects that I have that I want to pursue are pursued more efficiently and more easily if I'm healthy and may be thwarted or may be compromised if I lack health. So both autonomy and welfare are promoted by access to health care. And that's arguably why most human rights organizations have declared access to health care to be a fundamental human right, although it's not in the United States. So privacy, and in the United States certainly privacy and access are related very closely. Privacy is I'm a philosopher, and philosophers have all kinds of notions of privacy, and so it's a complex notion. But the relevant notion here, I think, is that it refers to protected information. And so we think of certain information as protected, and intuitively almost all of us think that there's certain kinds of information that we don't want others to have. And we probably have a kind of gradation. Some information is more important than others, and some things we don't care at all about whether others have access to. But most of us, healthcare records and financial records are things that we don't particularly care for other people to have access to. And so, I mean, even though my financial records are pretty boring, I still don't want you to have access to them because that's just the way I am. And so privacy interests really ultimately are rooted both in autonomy and welfare. In the obvious sense of welfare, medical information, and there'll be a slide in just a minute to talk about that more, but medical information about my medical history could be used in ways to impact me adversely by either organizations or by individuals, presumably similarly with my financial records. But it's also related to autonomy, just in the sense that there are some things, information about me that wouldn't hurt me if other people have it, but we simply say it's not their business. And so both autonomy and welfare ground, as it were, the right to privacy that we think all individuals have. So then what risks do genomic medicine impose? This is supposed to be the bad part of genomic medicine. This is the downside. How might genomic medicine put access to health care and privacy at risk? And here I want to emphasize, at least, and haven't worked this out with respect to countries that have universal health care, but in a country like the United States where we have don't have universal health care, it seems to me the right to privacy and the right to access are really intricately interwoven. It's not that privacy is not important in countries that have universal health care, and it's not that your welfare can't be adversely affected, but it seems to me it's adversely affected in different ways that would be interesting to develop. Genetic information, as Dr. Wallace's definition of genomic medicine mentioned, genomic information can be gleaned. Genetic information can be gleaned from family history, from genetic tests, and so forth. And in the United States, most of us have access to health care, unless you're independently wealthy or you can pay for it. Most of us have access to health care in virtue of having health insurance. And typically, for most of us, that comes through our job. So health insurance, as we know, is provided by for-profit corporations and for-profit corporations have appropriately have goals to make money, to reduce their costs, to reduce their risks and the like. And so that creates a kind of a tension, an obvious tension, especially in our system. So if either genetic testing or family history are part of your medical record, and they obviously are part of your medical record, and if your medical record is something that insurance companies can have access to and they won't pay unless they have access to your records, then it creates a kind of dilemma for individuals who want to take advantage of these good things that genomic medicine offers, either through the kind of family history that Dr. Jones emphasized or through genetic testing that we haven't talked about. If you can have those things and take advantage of them, it gives you a better chance of detecting disease early and dealing with it or positively promoting health. But the apparent downside is that it may be used against you, and so you may be either denied health insurance or you may be charged higher, you may not be able to renew your health insurance, and so forth. And so it looks like the individual, in terms of self-interest, faces a dilemma. On the one hand, I'd like to avail myself of all this wonderful material that genomic medicine offers, but the downside is if I avail myself of it, I may be denying myself everything that medicine offers unless I can pay for it independently. So that the dilemma is created by the information, and it's hard to see how the information can be protected. Now, there are other ways, other parts of life, just where besides health insurance, where the information gleaned from your record might hurt you, and certainly you might employment could be put at risk, disability insurance, life insurance, and no doubt many other things. And I suspect most of us would put employment and health insurance at a higher range than we would these other things. So this is just to note that research in genomics may also have this negative impact on groups. And so we know, of course, many groups have a greater predisposition to certain kinds of disease. That's already known independent of genetics. But if research establishes some sort of genetic basis and people have assumptions about genetic determinism and the like, then it may reinforce views and may create stigmatization of groups and the like. And so in finishing, the last right I want to talk about is the right not to know. This is a big in genetic counseling, but it might seem like an odd right because we fought so hard for the right to know. We fought so hard for informed consent, which includes learning about the benefits, the risks, the alternatives, and the like, and yet then people come along and say, but I also want to have the right not to know. And say, okay, this is really strange. But in the context of genetic testing, it certainly is that the genetic counselors know about psychosocial benefits and risks, and so people don't respond the same way to knowing that they're at risk, either that they will get a disease like Huntington's or that they're at greater risk like breast cancer. And so some people want to know and some people don't want to know. Some people are made more comfortable if they know. Some people are made more uncomfortable if they know. And so what we think is let the individual autonomously choose. And I just have a couple slides here that indicate this right not to know has been recognized in the European Convention on Human Rights and Biomedicine. That was 1997, where they affirm that the individual has not only the right to know, but the right not to know. The UNESCO Universal Declaration was also the same year, 1997, which it said that the individuals have both the right to know and the right not to know. And the Declaration of Rights of the World Medical Association. And one of the things that's noteworthy here is it says the patient has the right not to be informed on his or her explicit request unless required for the protection of another person's life. One of the really intriguing things about this and ethically complex is not only are my rights involved, but my family members' rights are involved. And so what makes it really an ethical, for ethicists love it because it's so complex, but what makes it really intriguing is my right not to know may cause damage to my family if I exercise it and may put my other family members at risk. So the interrelationship among all the obligations is really intricate in those cases. And maybe I don't, as some people say, maybe I don't have a right not to know if my family member's welfare would be at stake. And that's not an idea we develop here. But So I would assume the sort of pragmatic upshot of the right not to know would be certainly that no genetic test is performed without your explicit consent. And even if a genetic test is performed, if you choose then not to get the results are not given to you without your consent. I think the right not to know in family history is much more complicated and much more difficult. There's a certain kind of family history I can't avoid knowing. And so it really is a curious kind of right, but I assume minimally, if my doctor is pressing me to give all that information about Dr. Jones talked about, and I'm, you know, I don't want to deal with that stuff, I assume that I have the right not to deal with that, and then not to foist information on patients. So there's a whole lot of good that genomic medicine can do to promote the health of individuals, and that's what's certainly been the upshot of what most of us have said here. But people have these worries, and in particular they worry in the United States that the right to access to health care, the right to privacy will be denied. The right not to know, I suspect, is not unique to the United States, but is far more worldwide, because that, I think, is independent of the healthcare system in which it exists.